T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Tillman up ahead, Winston. No one near him. And he's going to come out with it. And Michigan State is headed to Minneapolis.
Middays on the Score.
Memorable game-ending play that might have been started by just a wink. If you saw some of the nonverbal communication that was going on before that inbounds pass, several people have isolated the moment where he kind of gives them a, hey, you know.
Maybe, go over this thing.
Yeah, run over there. What a pass. What a catch. Amazing. If you saw some of the angles, he had the tiniest space. That's like an Aaron Rodgers pass into a place where only he could get it and where nothing bad could happen. Worst scenario, it's tipped out and they do it again and a little bit of time runs off the clock. But the fact that he came on the dead run and got just enough of a hand up to complete it and end the game is remarkable.
Very pleased with the last second efforts of really the entire tournament. You see, the viewership is the third highest for an NCAA tournament over the last, I think it's since 2008. Richard Deitch was just kind of tweeting out some of the numbers there. Everybody's watched. Everybody's been into it. And the games have paid off. I think by and large, they've really paid off.
They've been great.
And Duke, too, even though, you know, they had these expectations of winning a national title and being that team that's one and done, they provided the entertainment for you, even if they busted your bracket or didn't let you with a Final Four contested. Like, that's some entertaining stuff to have watched.
There was so much good basketball. I'm blown away by Auburn's speed. Blown away. Because every time you think, oh, there's that fast guy again, you're like, wait, no, that's a different guy.
They're all still fast.
They have three different little guards who are just, each one is a blur in his own right. In Harper, in McLemore, and in Bryce Brown. It is just incredible.
I think I've come around on Virginia a little bit, too. You know, they play an 80-75 game. Granted, in overtime against Purdue. It's not that I've come around on what they are. I think I've come around on watching this particular version of death basketball. I've come around on watching these guys and how they play it. There are a handful of dudes that they can kick the ball out to and hit threes to keep them. I mean, you saw it against Purdue. They kept pace. As tough as it was to keep Edwards away from everything, he's pretty fun to watch. But you're going to see, I think, Auburn and Virginia shoot some big-time threes. And I don't know whether or not Virginia can strangle those guards out from being able to run as fast as they want to, as fast as they can. If they do, then it seems like Virginia has the ability to hit threes, you know, over like 36, 37%. They got two guys that can shoot it pretty well and keep you in that ball game should Auburn decide to run and gun.
It isn't just the open court where speed matters. There are a lot of ways you can make speed matter in the half court, too. And if you look at the way Allen Iverson was used, not just with the ball, but off the ball, there are long slice cuts that you can use. First of all, your spacing has to be a little bit wider. And if Virginia's going to pack the paint, which they do, and if they're going to keep everybody locked down trying to build that little wall, and they do it very, very well, and they are ridiculously disciplined and cleaving to the principles of the Bennett defense, guys can get a head start. You can get some guys going downhill a little bit. The other thing speed helps you do, and if you remember when Ben Gordon was at his peak on the Bulls, when Ben Gordon, no matter what happened, he could get his shot because no matter how far a double team or a blitz of a pick and roll would push him out, he was always fast enough to get back around it. But the only limitation was really sort of a backcourt violation. He was speedy enough to run the bubble or to run the edge of the circle. Think about a really fast pass rusher.
Okay.
Who, depending on where the tackle sets up, is able to take it out around and still have the speed to close. If you're going to blitz, if you're going to push guys out, really fast guys can make that a dangerous and risky defense simply because of their speed. Mm-hmm. And Auburn's got three guys who can do that. It's different because you don't have the finisher now. That you don't have one of your guys at the basket who was going to make you pay.
Maybe the guy underneath the basket.
Right, the guy. The guy, and you know, first round pick to be, but they more than made up for it in that last game. I'm really impressed with the job that Bruce Pearl did with those guys.
The left side of the bracket's fun too, the Michigan State Texas Tech matchup, because that's technical work. Texas Tech's defense is a joy to watch. I appreciate you diagramming it for me on the first day of the tournament, because now you really see how they, I was going to say sell out, but it's not that. There's like this conjoined effort. It looks like everyone's selling out to it, but the recovery of shading everybody toward the basketball, cutting off passing lanes the way they do it. I mean, it's an all five kind of defense that strangles people.
Well, the ability
to dynamic switch.
I mean, when you can switch pretty much everything, when you have that many similarly sized players and you don't have to worry about specific positional mismatches, and it's just this amoeba concept, that's pretty hard to beat. It's also their individual principles. They're handsy without fouling. Their knees are low. Their heads are up. There's not a lot of reaching. It isn't just the team defense. Each individual is extremely well schooled. I also think that Auburn does a really good job getting hands in passing lanes. They contest everything.
Yeah,
there's like almost like backwards
inside
steals.
Too. I mean, they plucked a couple from Kentucky in the paint where you thought, yeah, okay, now you get a drop step and kind of a layup or an easy bucket off the corner of the glass. But
routine givebacks. They're disrupting routine passes that a lot of defenses will say, okay, you it's a, like almost a dribble handoff kind of thing. They're getting hands on those. Those matter. The deflections matter. I've got a 309 texter with a string of thoughts here who says, I agree with you. I used to care so much about the recruiting violations and shady coaches, and the FBI probe just proved what we already knew. Everybody cheats under the rules of the idiotic NCAA, and if anything, some of the money exchanged was lower than I would have guessed. Accept it. Enjoy the Selfs and Calipari's. They exist. Enjoy the game. You're probably hearing from Illinois fans are still angry from Bruce Pearl reporting the Deion Thomas stuff 3 decades ago. Who cares? I'm an Illinois alum, a fan. I get over it. We're all in the wrong anyway. So we've had some amazing basketball this week. So the disgrace is that the athletes don't get anything out of it.
It is. I was reading the payouts to different conferences. The SEC is going to make something like $32 million and pay those out with their win shares from all these teams advancing. The Big Ten has the biggest share. I think it's something like 35.
Jeez.
It's a lot of money. I mean, the tournament is a gigantic moneymaker. It funds programs. And even though you're going to get that all paid out over, I think it's like 6 years, installments over 6 years, those are athletic department making sums. Those are checks that clear, and those are checks that fund all the programs. And you've got 5, 6, 11 kids. I mean, if you want to take the whole team, 11 kids kind of running this whole thing, funding this whole thing.
In Edison Park, John, you're on the score. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. Good to hear you. Yesterday's Duke-Michigan State game was the first game that I had a chance to sit down and actually watch this whole tournament. And it was a good situation. I was with family at my place, and I was in every shot, in every pass. I'm so glad Michigan State won. I don't have any rooting interest at any school, but it was such good basketball. And we had a lot of fun watching it. And I don't know who's going to win. I'm in now. I'll definitely watch the rest of the tournament. But I wanted to make also a comment on the Midway show, or the Midway segment, about the guy that had to buy the license for fishing.
Yeah,
the noodling. I'm a big time fisherman. I love when Dan talks about fishing. I love when Danny Mac talks about his Canada trips. I do it too. I know people hate having to be forced to buy licenses, but I just want to say buy them, because it helps save what we have left in nature. So with that said, thanks for the good shows. And if you could pass a message to Lawrence, I'm real happy for him. It just sucks that I don't get to listen to him now because I'm on my way to work.
Thanks, John. Appreciate all the information.
Good call.
Yeah, no, the money, the pittance that you pay for a fishing license goes for conservation efforts.
What was a fishing license run? You haven't bought one in about the decade.
I think it's like $17. I got to get mine soon. So I've got to...
Not a whole lot of money.
Got to get my annual.
Are those reciprocal, or do you need to buy licenses in a bunch of different states?
You got to... Every state.
So Illinois is no good for Wisconsin, and Wisconsin's is no good for Minnesota?
Correct. And there are different stamps you have to buy depending on the kind of fishing that you do, whether you're doing like a Great Lakes trout salmon, it's a different stamp. than you would get. There's an inland trout. I believe it's inland trout season either now or soon. They stock a lot of the forest preserve ponds with rainbow trout for people to harvest per certain rules. Then there's the whole Canada thing, and that's
I bet they charge.
Well, they charge, but if you depending on the lodge, if at a good lodge,
oh, the license comes with.
Well, not only that, it's by the time your luggage has been placed in your cabin and you go to the lodge to sort of check everything in, all the paperwork is done, everything is set up, and then you just sign it and you're off and going. We got some sound here, I think, that is worth a listen. And we mentioned a couple weeks ago what it meant that Dick Vitale finally came around to, we got to pay the players. We got to find a way to pay the players. This model that we have is
called it a cesspool, right?
Broken. He called college basketball a cesspool, and he figured that there was a way to do this. This is no less than Mike Krzyzewski himself talking about a way for the NBA and NCAA to get things right, and what is wrong with what they're all doing.
A big thing about going to the NBA is staying in the NBA and trying to be prepared once you go in there, not just physically, but emotionally. And I applaud, and I'm glad that kids will be given the opportunity to make a decision. Am I ready to do that? Or the other thing, the NBA will be well prepared. The NCAA is not prepared right now. They need to be in concert with the NBA in developing a plan that is specific for men's college basketball. And that should include what an athlete gets, how he's been taken care of, whether or not there's a reentry. It's deep. And if we only look at it shallow, then we're doing a disservice to the kids. And it behooves us to be ahead of it. And that's why to comment on what's going to happen, we don't know what's going to happen. We should be figuring that out in a smoother way. And I would, you know, really be a proponent for all of you to push that issue in whatever way you think it is. I'm not telling you what to do, but that needs to happen. You know, the definition of amateurism and it's outdated. You know, we need a new model. You know, and with all these things that are changing, it cries out for coordination of creating this new model. And if we don't do it, our game's going to suffer.
Okay, a new model.
I'll give him
outdated.
I'll give him some credit for that. But you'll forgive me if my dislike for the guy and the program kind of rears its head after they've been knocked out of the tournament.
Well, my distaste for him telling reporters what to do, what narrative to push.
Well, see, that's the thing is you're Coach K, and you're going to sit there for a minute and a half, and while it's great that you're going to say that the amateur thing is outdated and that these kids need some sort of support, you're Mike Krzyzewski. It's arguable that no one has a larger impact on the game of college basketball than you do. To go up there and say, y'all have to get this together, you guys have to do all this work of getting a plan together. Have a plan. Have a thought. Do something. Mean something to the sport that you've meant so much to over the last 35 years. It sounds like the guy, it's like the best time to call for an arms agreement is when you're behind. You know, it's like when you're looking around going, oh my God, everybody's got this except for me. Do you know how long it took him to embrace the whole one and done model? It took he was behind the times.
That's when he was calling William Avery's mother, screaming at him, saying, your son's going to program.
He was pissed about that. He was upset with other coaches for taking advantage of the rules that he refused for whatever reason to take advantage of for years. So now that he's finally on board with this and sees the system that he finally figured out running going away in three seasons, this guy's looking around going, hey, I need new rules to circumvent here. I need new rules that I can play by and or not play by. And my assistants who do or don't know which cash is going to what car and what guy and what shoe company, I need to know how to get around this stuff. And you guys don't have any rules for me. I want rules, and I have no opinions about what those rules should be. You guys figure it out. Thanks.
Brian Hamilton of The Athletic joins us next with his thoughts on this endlessly exciting college basketball tournament and the Final Four. He comes up next on The Score.
What a comeback. Down 10 in the first half. It was Clark's rundown and the subsequent pass to Diakite to tie. And that's it. Virginia advancing to the Final Four for the first time. first time since 1984.
All right, I guess I'll have to keep watching Virginia.
Yeah, you got to watch more
these games. I don't have a choice right now. Brian Hamilton covers college basketball for The Athletic and the Big Ten Network. You find him on Twitter, @_Brian_Hamilton, and he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. It's funny that if you just looked at the names of the teams remaining, you might think that this was all kind of crazy. But when you really watch the basketball, this is a perfectly reasonable, representative, and very competitive group of remaining teams, Brian.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of people who just said, oh, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, star power, or not a lot of, you know, the high-level play in the Final Four. I completely disagree. I mean, I think it's representative of the season we've had. I think that in college basketball, you could probably look at 8, 9, 10 teams that are probably a tier above everybody else. And there is just kind of like a good to middling group below that, just with tons and tons of teams. To me, Virginia, Michigan State, and Texas Tech have always been in that top tier. I mean, every team has ups and downs. Virginia's had less downs than a lot of teams, but you know, Michigan State and Texas Tech, to me, when they looked their best, looked like teams that could compete to go to a Final Four. And Auburn's just had, you know, injury issues and personnel issues along the way. So they've always been talented enough. I mean, we've seen it. They've had enough firepower and enough talent to make a run in the tournament. So even if you didn't have them, per se, like in that top tier of teams towards the end of the season before the SEC tournament started, like you said, it's not unreasonable that Auburn is in a Final Four based on the talent they have. And Virginia, Michigan State, and Texas Tech have been among the best teams in the country all season.
It's crazy to watch Duke really all tournament long, whether it was UCF or Virginia Tech or then Michigan State who bounced them. I can't tell if it's more amazing that they didn't run to a final with Zion or that they didn't get bounced earlier in this tournament. You could kind of flip a coin for me on this team.
Well, I think that's what it came down to in the postseason. You know, I looked at, and I'm not saying I'm any genius, but I picked Michigan State to beat Duke in that game when the brackets came out, just because I thought Michigan State defends as well or better than anybody inside the arc. Their two-point defense makes it really difficult on teams to get anything easy, and Duke doesn't shoot well from beyond the arc. And I know they got a few big baskets from three-point range yesterday, but I kind of felt in the tournament, especially as it wore on to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, that they were going to be living on the edge a little bit. I mean, RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson are two of the best finishers I've seen in a long time in college basketball. RJ Barrett at the rim in traffic. So that's how they can, you know, make their hay, even though teams are making it tough for them in 2-point range. But RJ Barrett just didn't finish, you know, in yesterday's game, missed a couple free throws. So, you know, they were living on the edge more than you'd expect a super team like that to do, because a team like Michigan State's really good and can kind of expose their weakness or at least mitigate their strength.
It's hard to not think that Tom Izzo has an enormous advantage with the Final Four experience that he has, that his counterparts lack at this point, was this his eighth or whatever it is, that so much of it is the kids understanding the responsibilities, all the media stuff, all the size of everything. You know, we get back to Norman Dale measuring the rims at Hinkle Fieldhouse to show his Hickory players that it's all the same, despite it feeling so different. But while it's easy to sort of stereotype that way, there's some truth to it, that his words are going to resonate a little bit more because he knows exactly what's in store for them this week.
I think he knows, but I do wonder that any kid who's in it, you can tell them as much as you want, but they're not going to understand it until they go through it. To me, like, I kind of think the looser teams wind up having an advantage. Like, if you're a team that can kind of just have fun and not take things terribly seriously and really learn to compartmentalize your focus, you know, have fun here and get down to business there, that to me is a really good way to handle the Final Four, because you're right. I mean, they're going to be shuttled from one thing to another. It's good. All these kids are new to it, so it's going to be an amazing thing no matter who they are. So I mean, Tom Izzo has that experience, and I guess he can sort of, he has the best practices in the back of his mind for how to like manage his team's time. But I think even the Michigan State players, like Texas Tech, like Virginia, like Auburn, they're still going to be a little wide-eyed walking around Minneapolis. So while you can tell them all you want, but what's your team made of? Are they able to sort of just compartmentalize the fun part of it, but then just get down to business, treat it like another game when they have to?
Did Virginia prove that they can be more than just a stifling defensive team in their win over Purdue?
They proved that all year to me. I mean, they've had one of the most efficient offenses in the country, the best offenses of Tony Bennett's time. I wrote about that back in January or February. I mean, they just have – it's not that just they have a lot of people who can score. They just have a lot of ways they can score. They have a lot of places they can score from. Last year, they didn't have that. They didn't have DeAndre Hunter against UMBC. They didn't have any answers for when the defense collapsed. And this year, they have – DeAndre Hunter, and you know, able to, as good a one-on-one player as there is in the country, and that he's surrounded by a lot of guys who have experience and can make huge shots. So their offense has been really, really good and really, really efficient all year. They didn't prove anything against Purdue. If anything, it sort of reinforced what we've seen, that when they need to score, they can.
Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz, the Big Ten West Division, and Holiday Bowl champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. Brian, we were talking a little X's and O's when it comes to that side of the bracket and Virginia against Auburn. I love the speed of Auburn's guards, like the actual speed with the ball and without the ball. If Virginia's going to pack the paint, it's going to give them an opportunity to be able to use the speed a little bit. And also, if they're going to come out and blitz the wings, they can take those long runs around some of those double teams and leave guys behind them. How do you think Tony Bennett is going to compensate for the fact that they've got three guys that can really motor?
I don't know that I think they're going to just try to control the pace like they always do. I think the challenge becomes, what if Auburn gets hot early and real hot early? Because then you're by your own nature, you're limiting the amount of possessions in the game. I mean, that's what Virginia does. That's what the Bennett family has long done. You know, that's how you win. Limit your opponent's chances. Well, Auburn can get red hot from three. And if they're red hot in those limited chances they have, well, now you've limited your own chances to come back against a team that's that good. I mean, look, Virginia's lost three games all season, and I don't think they certainly played in a conference with tremendously good athletes, and they've played in a conference with a lot of speed. They've seen everything along the way. I don't know that having super quick guards is really going to be all that much of a new thing for them. They compensate their own ways with their system and controlling pace and being solid and, you know, forcing you, sort of dictating what you should do on offense by the way they play defense. So, I mean, Bryce Brown's probably going to be a problem for anybody if you want to try to guard Bryce Brown one-on-one. Same thing with Jared Harper. But, you know, Virginia's seen those kind of athletes before too.
How many schools come calling for Chris Beard now that he's got Texas Tech in a Final Four?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing because the system they run, and he kind of joked about it after they beat Gonzaga. I mean, it's sort of a misnomer that they slow it down. Again, they're kind of one of those teams that just controls tempo. That said, they're like in the 200s nationally tempo wise. It's kind of like, what system do you want your school to have? Like, is Chris Beard side defense, you know, kind of defense first, grind it out, secrets in the dirt system, is that a good fit for UCLA? I don't know. I don't know if UCLA wants a little more of a Hollywood thing. Now, if they want to win, you might want to hire Chris Beard.
Right.
Probably a pretty guaranteed way to do that, as we've seen. But, you know, it depends on what you're okay with your system being, because, you know, chances are a lot of nights they're not going to put up 80 points. You know, they're not going to be capping out at 90 unless they just go berserk shooting. Now, they're going to defend the heck out of you, and they're going to make it incredibly difficult on you. Teams don't get what Texas Tech is like until they see Texas Tech, which is one of Texas Tech's great advantages.
But is that the tone of the recruiting pitch that we're talking about, too? I don't think that UCLA would want the identity as where he's going to go to elite prospects and say, come to me and work your ass off. Right?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's not a negotiable thing. I mean, he'll say that right from the start to anybody he's recruiting right now. And I mean, he's getting like four-star guys, and Kyler Edwards is a freshman. He's a top 100 guy, a four-star player. So it's not like it's a turnoff for everybody. But yeah, I mean, can you see a lot of like guys with NBA stars in their eyes in California really wanting to go, and the first thing they're going to learn is like you can't get on the floor until you play defense? I think it would be tough, but I think in certain programs it would be a perfect fit. You know, I mean, like I think Texas A&M is probably going to hire Buzz Williams, but you could hire Chris Beard there, and you'd be great. You know, if Texas makes a change next year, Shaka Smart, Chris Beard would be a great fit there. I think in places where it has to be a little glitzier, a little glamour the way you play, I don't know.
Brian, we discussed a little earlier on the show, Mike Krzyzewski's plea to the NCAA to figure out their stuff sooner rather than later as the NBA gets rid of the one-and-done rule. He kind of championed the end of the current state of amateurism. He kind of sees the issues now in a system, but is begging the NCAA to do something. You think Coach K should be more involved in how to shape his sport, a sport that he's kind of helped shape over the last 30 years? What's he trying to do with some of his comments the last weekend here?
My sense would be is that he sees the end coming sometime soon. The guy's 72 years old. I mean, I don't know how long he expects to coach, but I think fundamentally what he's saying is, I want to know the rules that I have to play under sooner than later and adjust to them as soon as possible with the way I recruit, the way I put together a team, so I can win more championships before I retire. Like, you know, if it takes the NCAA one or two more years to kind of, you know, okay, well, am I recruiting one and done still? And then, okay, well, now I'm not recruiting one and done anymore, so I've got to try to get my hooks into these kids, the right kids when they're freshmen and sophomores, make my choices a little different, you know, because recruiting is not like a thing that you just start months ahead of time. I mean, some of these guys you want to build relationships with over years and years and years. So to me, it sounds like Mike Krzyzewski saying, I only got a few of these years left in me. I want to know how I'm going to have to adjust, and sooner than later, to how I build a program that has a chance to compete for a championship year in and year out. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure Mike Krzyzewski can sort of weigh in on some of these topics, but I mean, as weird as the NCAA is, and as good as Mike Krzyzewski has been, I don't know that you just like sort of have Mike Krzyzewski as your de facto chairman of change in the NCAA. I mean, it's just sort of not how it works.
No, I would suggest that when you have a once in a lifetime generational talent near the end of a game, you might want to give him the ball.
I would maybe suggest that too, because it seemed like every time Zion Williamson had the ball, he was scoring 2 points for his team. So that might have been the way I would have gone. Yeah.
That's some in-depth basketball thinking right there.
Brian, the Athletic.
Yes, we appreciate it. Brian Hamilton of the Athletic, outstanding stuff. We've got Lawrence Holmes coming up in a little bit for transition and all sorts of sports energy here. There was a lot going on. It was a tiring weekend. Yesterday was an assault on the senses, frankly.
Fair.
In good ways and bad.
So let's find some things to celebrate. You want to do that for a brief moment? Can I please celebrate Eloy Jimenez for just a damn moment?
Absolutely you can.
Thank you. We'll do that. When we come back, it's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Are you as excited as I am?
By the sounds of it, no.
You're asking the lead singer of The Cure if he is as excited as you are.
I don't care anything.
Who you are, the answer is going to be no.
Thank you. No.
We want to thank Sahadev Sharma and Brian Hamilton for joining us today. Brian Gertz, the video feed. Zawoski, Camp, and Diaz, the producers. Joe Ostrowski, the updates. Joe Sheehan at 10 o'clock tomorrow, and plenty more coming your way as well.
Hopefully panic subsides at least a little bit. We still had a couple of things to celebrate from our weekend of baseball. Eloy Jimenez gets his first big league hit. You got Moncada hitting one from the left side, a home run there. I'm still, did you watch Lucas Giolito?
Yeah, he's really good.
It takes some getting used to. That delivery, from last year to this, it takes some getting used to trying to watch and evaluate and whatnot. But it feels a whole lot more comfortable. And the fact that he was able to hone himself in after walking the leadoff man in his 6 2/3 innings of no-hit bid baseball, that's nice stuff. That's what you'd like to have heard from him for a while now. That's nice.
I haven't looked at the pitch effects data to see sort of where the velocities and movement were.
He's good.
If he's 95, 96, and coming downhill or driving downhill off the mound.
It's nice to see his up and over, the shorter arm motion. Because as a longer guy, the big catapult just doesn't – it can throw you off. Randy Johnson gets to do that. Not many others are able to do that with that kind of consistency.
We're going to talk to Lawrence Holmes and let him fly this thing. Transition next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.